After the music,
Log
I'll ask.
Talk Radio.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their mind, are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street singing songs and they're carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on. We better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of UF Tread on Me Radio. With me, as always, on this show is Gary Hunt. How are you doing, Gary?
Just fine. And we'll see. Randy and I were talking about something before the show came on, and it was rather enlightening, and covering our things to come in this country, perhaps. So Randy's going to explain that to you all right now. So, Randy, go ahead.
All right. Less than a week ago, I was out prospecting. I started up a new company. I'm out prospecting, looking for new clients. And I happened to be walking by one of the regional offices, you know, one of the campaign offices for this guy named Nenshi. He's running for mayor of Calgary. Now, Calgary is the biggest population center in Alberta, which happens to be the only profitable province in all of Canada. Alberta supports Canada, all of it. So, as I'm walking by, I come out of a business, and I'm walking by, and I see Nenshi coming out with three or four of his campaign supporters with a bunch of signs. So I take this time, I'm dressed very nicely, I take this time to walk up to him, introduce myself, and ask him if I could talk to him for a moment. He says, sure. So I start asking him about some of his plans that he has for Calgary. He talks about reduced regulation on business, less taxation and things like that. But there's a lot of things that he talks about that violate the Constitution of Canada, which in itself is just an addendum to Magna Carta. So it also violates Magna Carta. And it also violates the Charter of Rights. So I started asking him about some of these things. He couldn't answer any of these questions about the Charter of Rights for Canada, about the Constitution for Canada, or about Magna Carta. So I asked him at the end, I said, what makes you feel you're qualified to be the head political officer for Calgary? And he starts going into all of this spiel about his time on city council. I said, wait a minute, again, what if you can't even answer questions about Magna Carta, the Constitution, and the Charter of Rights in Canada, which whether you're an immigrant or you're a natural-born citizen here, you should know. If you don't even know what the law of the land is, what makes you feel qualified to be the mayor of Calgary? His jaw dropped, hit the ground. He just stared at me for a minute, mumbling and babbling incoherently, and I walked away. I had made my point. Yesterday, he wins the race for mayor. And apparently today, his first thing before he even gets into office, he's going to replace the chief of police here, I guess, or that's his plan, to replace the chief of police here, who, according to all the stats, has been doing a pretty good job. I mean, as far as, you know, crime going down, this and that. You know, if you look at those numbers as, you know, the police doing a good job, he's doing a good job. He's going to replace him, though, with a Muslim chief of police now. And Canada's been having a big issue with Sharia law wanting to be put into place here. And people trying to enforce their Arabic rights and their Muslim rights. I didn't know that there was. I always thought there was a Charter of Rights and the Constitution of Canada and Magna Carta. Just like in the States, you know, we have the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. That's it. That's all there is. There are no Muslim rights, gay rights, or anything else. We have the Bill of Rights. And we have the Constitution, which limits that power. So today, it was kind of enlightening and eye-opening today when I see this very large push. And then a very large push coming on to start bringing in more and more Muslims into high positions of power here in Canada. And then I noticed that, you know, then I realized that this has been going on all over Europe. In fact, Tony Blair, his main goal, he said when he took office a long time ago in the UK when he became prime minister, he said that his goal was to open the floodgates of immigration so wide that the entire culture, the entire British culture would be non-existent by the year 2020. When he left office, he said, I achieved that goal. Now in Britain, they have Magna Carta there. That is the law of the land. And unfortunately, it's not the law of the land anymore because now the law of the land is massive immigration. Those immigrants now bringing their customs, their culture, their laws, and making that the law of the land. Is this a sign of things to come in the future? I think that's up to us. I don't believe in any other rights except for the Bill of Rights, natural rights, man's rights. I don't believe in the rights of politicians or anything else like that. I don't believe in special interest groups' rights, ethnic groups' rights, or anything else. I believe in the Bill of Rights and the limitation of government and the free will of man. That's it. That's all there is. So keep this in mind. Look around your neighborhood, your community, see if this is going on. And if it is, you better do something. Look to Europe for what's coming to you. And with that being said, I think we're done there. And I think I lost Gary. So we got to get Gary back on. Here he is.
It's me.
Hey, Gary, welcome back.
I don't know what happened.
We lost you there, man. Skype's not being friendly tonight. But I got done with that, and then I told everybody what was going on up here and what I, you know, possible forthcomings for the U.S. So keep an eye out for it in your community.
We've had taste of it in a few places already, and well, until we take our country back, we can expect more of it because Germany has no way out now. They're so deep in that even what Merkel said this past week, they're going to have trouble reconciling that with the current position they're in. They're going to get pressure from the UN and the United States to hold firm on multiculturalism as we get here.
Germany has openly come out and said by the year 2050 there will no longer be a German state.
Muslim majority, yeah. And unless they do something. And like I say, the political pressure from UN and the European nations and from the United States will be to continue with multiculturalism unless we get our country back and start saying multiculturalism sucks. And
I'm all for American culture.
The favors of multiculturalism around the world.
You know, I'm all for American culture. That's, you know, I love my country. That, you know, I love the American culture, and I think that if people want to, you know, if they want to live in the Greek culture, then great, go live in Greece. If you want to live in, You know, the Egyptian culture, there you go. There's Egypt for you. Go live in that culture. If you want to live in the American culture and you want to assimilate and be an American and you have something to offer, well, then welcome aboard. Be an American.
Yeah, we'll get on with the show in just a second, but something occurred to me today when I was reading about the Merkel thing, and what we've got basically, you can have a society, or you can have, like America had for years, where people assimilate into that society, or you end up with a tribal society. Now, a couple of weeks ago, some maps came out of some major cities showing how different cultures have clustered together in parts of cities. They're becoming tribal. They're all within the same boundaries. It's not quite like it was with the Indians or in Africa, but what you've got is a tribal situation where you've got all these different tribes, and eventually they're going to start vying with each other for resources if resources become short. And we are a tribal society by allowing these large enclaves of people of different culture to come in, bring their culture with them. Each of these little enclaves will grow and grow and grow as more people come in, and you know, it may be the end of the country. Anyway, on with the show. Question was asked a few months ago in a conversation with a friend. The question was, could a revolution be conducted in the modern world considering modern technology, extensive government troops, and battlefield weapons? At first, the task seemed so ominous, so daunting, and against such odds that it would be impractical, if not impossible. Upon reflecting on what must have been equally daunting to the founding fathers, it is not, as first anticipated, such an ominous task. Now, the plan...
You there, Gary? I think we're going to have problems with Gary's Skype tonight. Well, everyone, give us a moment while we try and fix this out. But basically, Gary was going through the disclaimer there. Let me see if I can get him back on. And we're having issues tonight. Sorry about this, folks. We'll get this cleared up and squared away and see if we can get this going. But in the meantime, you know, that opening part I did about the Muslim aspects, as many of you know, I've talked often about, you know, I don't believe in a Muslim conspiracy or Jewish conspiracy. I believe that there's a bunch of rich people all over the world, and they really don't care about ethnic agendas and things. They're looking at a total global government system. And they decided to work together because it benefits them. You know, in the end, though, it's just a few rich elite snobs from all walks of life who are trying to control everybody else and take what is ours. And here's Gary again. See if we can't get him back now. You know, personally, I don't have a problem with Muslims. You know, as long as your ideas don't interfere with my freedoms and my liberties and my rights and my...
How far did we get?
We got to the part where you had said, at first it seemed like a very daunting task.
Okay, well, rather than repeat all that, it didn't seem as daunting after I thought about it and compared it to what the Founding Fathers had achieved. And... So let's see if we can stay connected this time, and we're going to back up a little bit from last week. This is theoretical. I got to get that part in. This is, if anybody follows this, it's only theoretical. It'll probably work, but it's only theoretical. We're at step 7, extension of influence into state government. I read the overview last week, but I went on to declaration of evolution of government, but I failed to read you the historical perspective, so we're going to do the historical perspective right now.
Okay.
On May 10th, 1776, the Continental Congress recommended that the various states, quote, adopt such government as shall, in the opinion of the representatives of the people, best conduce to the happiness and safety of their constituents in particular and America in general, end quote. So the Continental Congress said, even before the Declaration of Independence said, hey, you states, go out and revise your governments and make them work for the people. Even though they had existing charters, the colonies chose to determine their futures in accordance with what the people felt most conducive to their future security. Though new constitutions were not adopted, the form of government within each of the colonies was revised to meet the exigencies of the day. Many continued to operate under their original charters, with the exception of any appointments made by the Crown. 2 months later, the states united declared to the world their purpose with the adoption of the Declaration of Independence. So now we've got states that have secured most of the state, and we've got enough of them together now that it's time for us to declare to the world and the rest of the people in the country the purpose behind what we're doing. It doesn't mean this has to be a secret to this point. When a government properly instituted under the authority of the people by virtue of the Constitution for the United States of America has abrogated its responsibility under said Constitution and has removed itself from responsibilities imposed upon it by said Constitution, and when those people choose to assume among the powers of earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitled them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to recognize such dissolution of government. We hold these truths to be, you're going to recognize a lot of these words, but we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and property, that to secure these rights within a society, governments are instituted among men of that society, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. When that government becomes destructive of those ends by usurpation of authority not granted by the people or by abrogation of responsibility, it is the right of the people to reinstitute that government on its original foundation and to amend that foundation to assure that such usurpations and abrogations do not recur. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they have become accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide for new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these states united under and by said Constitution, and such now is the necessity which constrains them to amend their former system of government. The history of all three branches of the present government is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. They have created a fourth branch of government that is independent of and not subject to the will of the people. Their courts refuse to rule upon the constitutionality of matters before them, if at all possible. They have imposed taxes that appropriate fully one-third of the value of one's earnings. They have generated a debt obligation on our posterity, still unborn, into the unforeseeable future. They have seduced millions of their people into dependence upon that government at the expense of their neighbors. They have secured for themselves benefit packages approaching those realized by members of royal courts. They have allowed the appointment of officials in capacities not recognized by the Constitution, though protected from recourse by the people. They have established control over state and local governments by funding and obligations associated therewith. They have supported the creation of a standing army amounting to over 1 million officers who have both civil and military authority given them by the government. They have expanded the standing army by granting policing powers to many agencies of government who have no need to be armed and authorized to use those arms. They have provided undue immunity and impunity to those who have been given such powers. They have enacted laws which have established only two parties from which candidates for federal office may be elected. They have endeavored to create empire around the world which serves not the people of this nation. They have waged war without proper declaration of war stating who the enemy is and what event will conclude those wars. They have enacted laws well outside of any police power anticipated. have subjected states to arbitrary control of the federal government, contrary to the guaranteed form of republican government within the states. They have allowed the use of fiat currency, contrary to the Constitution, and have continued this practice under the guise of national emergency, which has existed for over 80 years. They have allowed favored financial institutions to loan money to the people at usurious rates, and they have not the money to loan. They have loosened the immigration laws that have served this country well through its history and refuse now to enforce those laws that have been acted to protect our nation from invasion. They have taken states of the Union to court for the states enforcing laws that the federal government refuses to enforce. They have extended their jurisdiction over the jurisdiction of the states, nullifying the state's right to a republican form of government. They have assumed jurisdiction in foreign lands, enforced by kidnapping, torture, and assassination. They have outlawed traditions held dear for centuries in this nation. They have removed the rights of traditional churches and have granted rights to churches foreign to our heritage. They have assumed authority not granted by the Constitution. They have denied the states and the peoples rights guaranteed and protected by the Bill of Rights. They have refused to abide by the separation of powers doctrine by allowing members of the judicial branch of government to hold office in the legislative and executive branches of government. They have granted to fictitious entities, corporations, associations, unions, and other organizations rights that are recognized to be granted only by the Creator to the people in their individual capacity. They have formed alliances with foreign nations which are objectionable to the intent of the Constitution and grant favors to foreign interests over the interests of their own people. They have accused large groups of our population, including veterans who have fought for the country, of being a source of threat to that government, naming them as terrorists. Nor have we been deficient in informing the government of their failure to acknowledge their obligations under the Constitution. Campaign letters, phone calls, and demonstrations have been ignored by the government, and those who have voiced objection have been slandered by representatives of the government. A government that has become so inured to its beliefs in its own supremacy so as not to recognize their obligation to respond with truthful answers to the questions posed by large numbers of people proves a disdain for those governed by that government. We have appealed to their magnanimity and in return have been chastised as incompetent and called names indicative of their supposed superiority. They have been deaf to people and to justice. For these reasons, we have found that this government has dissolved itself and our allegiance thereto, and forced us into a state of nature until such time as the Constitution is restored as the supreme law of the land. Randy, take it for a while.
You know, that's a long bit to go over there, but a lot of that, you know, a lot of what we're we've discussed on the plan is just revamping the only plan that's ever worked in the entire history of man that I can find, that has taken people out of tyranny into freedom and kept us there for a while at least, until we let it go. The plan was laid out for us. The infrastructure was set up for us and created for us. We've just forgotten it, or we've been made to forget about it because it's been written out of history. You know, like all things, though, peaceful measures and resolutions should be tried by all means. I believe the pen is mightier than the sword, but the pen must always be backed up by the sword for it to truly have any effect. And that was the concept behind the Committee to Safety as well. The pen is mightier than the sword. You notice, according to the Founders' plan, you know, armed uprising to overthrow a tyrannical government was the last step of the plan, the action of last resort.
Well, let me pick up now. Now, remember, this is not to start a revolutionary war. This is to start putting pressure on the government so they fear God and the people. The extent of the escalation of this effort under the plan is totally dependent on the government's willingness or failure to willingly submit to the will of the people. The door is open at all times to anybody that works for the government to cross over onto our side. So this is not intended to be, let's wage war. It's an effort that hopefully would minimize the bloodshed, and the extent and the amount of blood that be shed would be totally dependent on the government's willingness or unwillingness to submit to the will of the people. We have a document in place that sets the rules, and all they have to do is abide by that document. Game's over.
That was my point. You know, the whole point of this is to try to figure out, you know, to find out, you know, I'll just let you continue on. I'm tired. I haven't slept much in the last few days. I'm having a hard time making it clear what I'm trying to say.
Well, the idea is a little bit more than putting signs on sticks and walking down the street at this point, because we've seen the dismal failure of that effort. You know, I've said for over a year now that at least if you put them on pitchforks, they'd think you were serious. But I have yet to see somebody put a sign on a pitchfork at a Tea Party demonstration. Ideally, they would put it on the end of their rifle. But nobody carries rifles except that one in Phoenix a while back. So anyway, now we get to the role of the committees in this step seven. The State Committee of Safety will need to transition into the permanent role of state governance. They will have determined which agencies within that government are to be retained, consistent with the Constitution. What personnel within the existing government are to be retained after taking a loyalty oath to both the United States and the state constitution. The seal of surplus county property, if necessary, to provide funds to continue operations and establish a procedure to provide for elections of the county supervisors or equivalent. The committee, those members who are not elected to official capacities, is to remain as advisory committee to the state government until they are released from that responsibility by the State Committee of Safety or reconstituted state government. Militia supervision and control will transfer to the state government once the State Committee of Safety has determined that it is functioning sufficiently to do so. Judicial functions will transfer to the reinstated state government as necessary, with most cases being dealt with at the county level. Property taxes and sales tax is collected will be held in the coffers of the committee to be used to continue services and provide for other needs of the activities of the committee until the committee determines the state government is functioning sufficiently to resume that responsibility. Taxes will be brought into compliance with the Constitution and the de jure government once the state has been secured. In the interim, the existing tax rates and collections will apply. No property will be seized for failure to pay taxes, nor will any liens issue or penalties be applied. A state legislature will be made of non-attorney members of the existing legislature who have taken an oath of loyalty and have been determined to not be inimical to the Constitution. Any vacancies remaining will be filled by elections held within the locales which were represented by the vacated seats. No loyalty oath or any other cause for the vacancy. Where both electors and candidates will have taken the loyalty oath and deemed not inimical to the Constitution. This legislature is to enact laws and pass bills within the limitations imposed by the Constitution, except as stated below. All other laws, except those enacted prior to the Civil War, will be presumed to be null and void until the Advisory Council shall resubmit them to the legislature as described below. The state constitution will be replaced with the last version of the Constitution preceding the Civil War, or for those states submitted after the Civil War, the first version adopted at statehood. All other laws shall be suspended. In civil matters, once an original or of the contract or affidavit stating the nature and details of the contract and explaining the nature of the breach of contract is submitted to the court may docket for trial. Any mortgage or loans shall continue to be held in abeyance until the national government is properly reinstituted. This is mortgages and loans. Is properly reinstituted and determination made as to the value of currency and the effect of fractional reserve banking on obligations made under such methods. The State Committee of Safety should select delegates who are versed in the Constitution for the United States of America and its origin and history to serve eventually on the Constitutional Compliance Convention. that will be the federal level. It is these delegates who will work with delegates from other states to complete the declaration of a dissolution of government and will serve on a national level as the convention will propose in greater detail. Now, there's the State Advisory Council. The State Advisory Council will be created, composed of citizens of the state, no one of which shall be in law enforcement or the legal profession, within each county, or with each county sending one delegate to the council. Delegates should be well versed in both the state and United States constitutions. The delegates, once assembled, may determine an alternate method of delegate selection. The state will have reverted to the previous constitution as described above. Any amendments to the constitution ratified after July 4, 1860 will be suspended until such time as the state advisory council has reviewed and determined that the amendment was constitutional and in the best interest of the people. If so determined, the council will forward to the state legislature a report recommending the acceptance of the amendment. The legislature may accept or refuse such report. However, no amendment will be considered lawful unless reported by the council, approved by the legislature, and ratified in accordance with the Constitution. The State Advisory Council will then begin a review of all laws enacted after July 4, 1860 to determine whether their authority was based on the Constitution above adopted. If the law is deemed constitutional, it shall be submitted to the legislature, including an explanation of the authority in the Constitution from which it was derived. The legislature may pass or reject any law in accordance with the Constitution only as submitted to them with the approval of the council. No other enactments or bills may be considered by the legislature unless submitted to the State Advisory Council, which will prepare a report as described above and return same to the legislature. If the report indicates that the proposed legislation is contrary to the Constitution, the legislature may not act upon it. If the proposed legislation is deemed consistent with the Constitution, the legislature may pass such legislation in accordance with the Constitution. The State Advisory Council will sit in the above described capacity for a minimum of 2 years after the federal government has been returned to its constitutional capacity and no more than 5 years after such return. The council may determine the completion of its purpose before the 5 years or will extinguish automatically upon that anniversary. At the extinguishment of the council, the legislature will have sole constitutional authority for enacting laws. The State Advisory Council shall accept and review any referendum submitted in accordance with the state constitution, if the constitution has such provision. If deemed constitutional, it will be handled in accordance with the state constitution. The purpose of the State Advisory Council is twofold. It is to be composed of people well versed in the constitution and law, though not a member of law enforcement or legal profession. By utilizing the council, the responsibility for review and recommendations will not burden the legislative body, detracting from the necessary operations of state government. In that capacity, it will be an interim function to assure that state government gets back on track to providing services, the service that it was created to do. Now, I know that sounds rather confusing, but if you look at the people in the legislature now and the people that will stand up in front of television and say, elect me, ever wonder how many have read the Constitution? I think in any study I've ever seen, you find none that are really versed in the Constitution. As Randy pointed out, it's true in Canada as well. So the idea is, until the state legislature gets back on track to thinking of the Constitution before they enact everything, they're going to have a supervisory board, and nothing, the advisory board cannot pass a law. But if it doesn't pass the advisory board, the legislature cannot pass a law or an amendment to the Constitution. So you've got the experience and the knowledge of the advisory council filtering everything from 2 to 5 years after the federal government comes back into operation. So the state gets back on track on thinking, well, is it in compliance with the Constitution? Now, along with that, there's limitations and requirements that will be imposed on the state legislature. All legislation shall be submitted by the following until 5 years after the United States government is restored to its proper constitutional form. It is to be understood that public is the people, not the government. just like we've defined marriage in California, we've got to define what the public is, and that is the people. It's not the government. That any religious displays on public property cannot be restricted or prohibited by government action. That a local jurisdictional body only may approve or disapprove of any display consistent with the desires of the community. That no law may be enacted which will allow any religion to receive preferential treatment under the law. That the advisory council shall prepare for presentation to the state government an amendment to the Constitution which would limit terms of office for all state elected offices to a maximum of 2 terms, and with the exception of the governor, shall have 1 intervening term out of office, which shall then be submitted to the citizens in accordance with the Constitution for the ratification. The state, so it doesn't pass the amendment, but it says that it will be drawn up and submitted to the people if they want term limits. I'd like to think the people would ratify it. Unlike the RAP, we're not being dictatorial. Everything has to go to the legislature and or the people to be ratified. We're making recommendations. The state will recognize the separation of powers and will prohibit any member of the judicial branch, whether state, federal, or both, by virtue of any membership, association, license, employment, partnership, or fiduciary relationship with any firm practicing under such authority from pursuing an office in the legislative or executive branch of government. Now, that would keep any attorney or anybody that works in an attorney's office or has an interest in an attorney's office from sitting in the legislative and the executive branches of government. They'll stay in the judicial branch where they belong. That the legislature shall enact legislation which would provide that by petition of 0.01% of the lawful adult population, a state citizen's grand jury be impaneled within 30 days of receipt of such petition to hear charges of violations of the Constitution and other laws of the state. And if a true bill is issued by the grand jury, a jury trial shall be held, peopled by citizens of the state, and the verdict and punishment in such trial shall not be questioned by any other authority. That those who sit on either grand or petite jury shall not be employees or under any contract with the government, nor shall they be members of law enforcement or the legal profession. That all administrative agencies of the state government shall be stripped of rulemaking authority, that all rules enforced by any such agency shall henceforth be created directly and specifically by an enactment of the legislature and passed into laws prescribed by the Constitution. That any agreement currently existing between any administrative agency of the federal government which binds, obligates, or otherwise coerces compliance of any state agency is and shall be null and void, and that no future attempts to create such relationship may ever be enacted or accepted. That the legislature will prohibit its members from receiving any emolument except his prescribed salary, gift, benefit, or favors while in office. Any member accused to be in violation shall be reviewed by the appropriate House's Ethics Committee, and if found to have received such emolument, gift, benefit, or favor, shall be immediately expelled from that House and not be qualified to return. That would be any lobby money or anything. That the legislature is not a benefactor or a philanthropic organization and is prohibited from redistribution of any revenue under any form of grants, scholarships, endowments, research funds, or any other form which does not have direct and identifiable return of the value of all funds provided. That the legislature is senior to any private organization and cannot contract with, support, depend upon, restrict, or allow any state employee to be a member of any union or any collective bargaining unit in any shape, form, or relationship, nor shall any law be enacted that establish any prevailing wage requirements for contracts. That any and all enactments by the legislature shall from this time forward provide a statement as to which portion of the Constitution grants the government authority over the subject matter contained in the enactment, specifically explaining how that authority was derived. That any and all actments will stand alone and bear on specific and singular objects without riders and amendments that deal with matters that are not directly related to the titled subject. That no compacts may be made with the federal government or any other state as such would impinge upon the sovereignty of the state. That the only provision in the nature of a compact between this state and any other state in the provision, is the provision in Article 4, Section 2 of the United States Constitution, and that's the when they transfer criminals. Got my mind on something else. That all bills submitted to the legislature shall be read in their entirety, including the constitutional authority, when said bill is first introduced to the respective houses and just prior to voting on such bill, and the entire text of any such bill shall need to be made available by publication in all major newspapers. For the purpose of reduction of the deficit and the debt incurred by previous legislatures, the legislature shall enact no new legislation which grants money that was otherwise unearned, i.e. welfare, block grants, etc., and shall adjust all such existing programs to reduce expenditures by 25% or more of the current expenditure each year until said program is reduced to nothing, and that all grants, loans, or other payments to other nations, domestic organizations, non-domestic organizations, or entities shall cease at the end of the current fiscal year and not be reinstated until such time as the budget shall be balanced and there is no future encumbrance or obligation for repayment of any debt, except that any provision may be removed and not reinstated by the Advisory Council, and the legislature shall not be considered an obligation. The legislature shall enact laws which act upon entities or corporations which are created by the state government that will provide oversight into their operation to include limiting any corporation to act only within a limited scope or an industry and not intended extend itself into areas where it has not been specifically authorized to conduct business by the articles of its creation. Prohibit corporations from investing in other corporations, the stock market, securities, futures, or any other enterprise for the purpose of making a profit or creating a loss. Prohibit importation of any goods, products, or materials from other countries unless unavailable within the United States. Prohibit outsourcing of any aspect of the business, provided that no foreign or domestic corporation may hold stock. Provide that no foreign or domestic corporation may hold stock in the corporation, and provide that no more than 10% of the shares of the corporation may be held by other than citizens of the United States. That the Congress shall enact legislation which provides for fair access to all elections by removing any enactments, laws, or rules which give a favor to any political party over another political party or individual seeking office, and shall limit the fees required to such office not to exceed $1,000 for any state office. That the Congress shall enact a law regarding campaign contributions which will limit any contribution to a single candidate to $200. That contributions can only be made by citizens of the state, and that corporations, political parties, unions, and other organizations are not provided freedom of speech by the Constitution and are disqualified and subject to criminal penalties for any contributions or any activities which are intended to influence the outcome of any election. Okay, Randy, pick it up a minute. I'm done with that one. I've got to take a breath.
You know, you brought up a good point there about Congress having to, you know, having to read the bills and to be required
twice,
once before and once again just before the vote, once upon submission and once before the vote, but also to have to submit a statement as to what section of the Constitution grants the authority for them to enact this bill. You know, something else came up, though, was a concept of rights and freedoms. And, you know, majority rule, you know, the rights of the majority versus the rights of the individual. And that's where Congress seems to really have gotten off skew. They're protecting the rights of majorities, not the rights of individuals anymore when they make these laws. They're protecting government more than anything else. And like you had said, you know, Congress seems to be running rampant with their freedoms, freedoms they don't even have. It's power that they've taken and they've usurped from we the people. They no longer are held accountable or even have to know what it is that the oath that they took even represents or means or stands for, what it says. I think if they go back and they have, and they're enforced to really understand it and then explain why this bill is lawful, we might see a better America tomorrow.
I'd like to think so. Imagine the health care bill, if they had to read it, it would take a couple of weeks. And with the first reading and the second reading, if they made any changes, they would be more apparent by the length of the reading without going through all, how many pages was that, 3,000? But at least they couldn't say we have to pass it before we figure out how it works. I think that's what Pelosi told us.
Is that how that works?
Yes, and restricting it, as I pointed out, you know, only things addressing that specifically, that means a $220 million Louisiana purchase for the buying Louisiana's vote could not be an amendment to that bill. If it doesn't deal with health care, it could not be in the bill. And there are, from the people that have read it, they say when you get to the end of it, and this is true of many of the large laws, Crime Control Act of 1994, which gave $25,000 to an art school in Winter Park, Florida, has nothing to do with crime control. Why is it there? Well, it's used to buy votes. Well, I'll give you $25,000 for the art school if you'll agree to vote for the Crime Control Act of 1994. Shake hands, done deal. Okay, I got your vote. So they're, the way they do it now, they buy votes from other congressmen who need something done. I think the analogy that I've used recently is you get a Tea Party candidate that believes in the Constitution from, say, Iowa, and he goes to gets elected, and he goes to Congress. And he gets there, and he's got a dam in Iowa that's right ready to break. It's in bad shape, and it needs refurbishment. So he gets there, and he says, he writes a bill granting $1.5 million to do repairs on the dam. And he submits it to the proper committee. It sits in committee, and he goes to the committee and says, how come my bill's still sitting here? Oh, we're still thinking about it. By the way, we've got a bill coming up that is going to provide free money to people that do something. And he says, well, that's not constitutional. Well, we were thinking of attaching your bill as an amendment to it. Now, if you're not going to vote for it, I don't see much point in attaching it as an amendment.
No.
So this guy from Iowa, this guy that's hard in the right place, gets there and finds out how the game is played. And that's how it's played. So he has two choices at that point. He votes for the bill that they want him to vote for so he can get his dam repaired, or he goes back to Iowa and watches the dam break and kill hundreds of people. Now, at that point, he becomes one of two things. He becomes a game player in the game of politics in Washington by getting the $1.5 million, sending it back to Iowa to repair the dam, and learning that the only way he's going to get anything is to go along with the crowd. Or he's going to go back to Iowa and say, I don't like that job. I'm not running for re-election. It cannot be changed. It's too fixed in its ways. And that's why I say that voting is not going to change a damn thing, because that's the way it's played in Washington. If you read the writers on any large bill and see what they're doing at the end of that bill by throwing money around, $220 million to Louisiana, for example, they are buying votes with your money. The powers that be, when enough of them get together, decide what they want passed, and then they start handing out, and this is committee chairman and the Speaker of the House that have the influence to manipulate the vote by buying the votes. So anyway, on the militia committee, the organization of command and commissioning of officers at the state level will be the top priority in establishing the state militia. That's correspondence committee. The correspondence committee will assure that media provides news of accurate and complete dealings of the state advisory council and the legislature. They will also continue their previous duties as necessary, especially providing a complete and accurate flow of news to other states. Judicial committee. The coordination of various judicial committees will begin to establish a revised state judiciary based on the limitations and requirements and subsequent enactments by the legislature. Liaison committee. The liaison committee contact should have been made with all state and federal agencies within the geographical boundaries of the state, and agreements reached where possible for a transition to the constitutional forces government. Now, this liaison committee working constantly, reaching out, you know, call the U.S. Forest Service and say, are you going to come over to our side? Well, you're not here yet, but, yeah, we'll be glad to come over when you get here. This is how we can avoid the open confrontation to a high degree, by having this liaison committee constantly reaching out to state, local, state, and federal agencies saying, hey, you're going to come over to our side. If the current head of that division says no, when you get that area, when you secure that area, you go into that office and say, is there anybody here that's willing to take over management of this operation and come over to our side? Somebody holds up his hand. He takes the loyalty oath. He fired the guy that would not come over, maybe even charging him with being inimical to the Constitution. And now that state agency, that federal agency, has come over to our side and become part of the constitutional forces. And this is the idea that I think is instrumental in minimizing the amount of blood here, by keeping the door open constantly for people to change sides, never closing the door on those that might want to change sides. That would include police departments, sheriff's offices, road and bridge departments, everything. Intelligence committee, dossiers and loyalty oaths will be required on large numbers of people. As the transition is made, coordination between the various intelligence committees will reduce duplication and provide results that are more reliable. So at this point, we're setting up a state intelligence committee that has, you know, I know it sounds nasty, but we've got to play nasty. Actually, completing dossiers on everybody that has any way, any involvement with the government, either the existing government or the constitutional forces government, so that you assure their loyalty. But when you consider the damaging effect of infiltration, that you've got to keep a constant eye out for people who might not serve the cause, because they can do a lot of damage in a short period of time if they're put in a position that would allow them to cause that damage. In war, it is an absolute necessity. And even though this isn't a full-blown war, it is an absolute necessity, because it can be so detrimental to the purpose that we've committed ourselves to that it has to be addressed in a practical manner. Okay, now we're extension of influence into federal and government agencies. Overview. Many federal agencies have operation centers throughout the state. These facilities can be secured, personnel evaluated, and continuance of service provided if within constitutional authority. Most federal agencies serve no useful purpose within the Constitution. Guidelines, so their facilities can be used for other purposes. No federal taxes should be collected, however, any revenue that does come in or any funds should be seized and held to provide for the provisional federal government once reestablished. Since many agencies of the federal government have offices in the state, as the states are secured, their offices are within the geography controlled by the constitutional forces. Securing these facilities and encouraging participation by their employees should be pursued as diligently as possible. It's also time for putting the de facto government on notice, understanding the need to advise the government, the people, and the world of the intentions of the constitutional forests. A declaration of... Are you still there, Andy? What was that?
No, I'm still here. My phone is beeping. I have someone
calling. To
be executed
by all states that have been secured sufficiently to advisory council. This might be warranted earlier in the process, though by this stage in the progression of events becomes imperative. States coming into the ability to execute the declaration may add their voices as that capability is realized. Now, I'd read the Declaration of Dissolution of Government. As with the Declaration of Independence, five of the items in the Declaration of Independence were added after the war began, after Lexington and Concord, for example, foreign troops. For example, taking people back to England for trial. These were added after the war actually began, so the Declaration of Dissolution of Government needs to be reviewed at this point to be made current. Some things might not apply. They might be deemed not appropriate. But other things may come into play by this time where the government has violated the law, like turning our troops against us, if that happens. But this is the point the states begin signing the Declaration of Dissolution of Government, joining in the Declaration of Independence, so to speak. Historical perspective. During the course of the Revolutionary War, there was an ebb and flow of areas controlled. Boston, Charleston, New York, and Philadelphia are the most pronounced instances. The securing of enemy positions, extending the areas of control, facilitated the colonists' needs for mobility, communication, equipment, forage, and food. Similarly, as secured areas were enlarged, the British found greater difficulty in supplies, forage, and food. Ultimately, this led to the downfall of Cornwallis at Yorktown. Now, Cornwallis, in an effort to catch the rebels, burned his baggage train. He was committed at that point to living off the land, which the British hadn't done very well at to begin with, but the only way he could move quickly was to drop this 2.5-mile-long baggage train he had. At that point, he was dependent upon the countryside. Now, the rebels were going along, and they would burn crops, take the cattle away, do whatever was necessary to reduce the available food supply for Cornwallis, and that gave Cornwallis no recourse but to go to Yorktown, where he could receive supplies by sea. And that, as we know, was his downfall. The same thing is, the more we can deny services to the federal government, the rebel government, the more pressure on them to give up.
Well, Gary, hang on a second.
Shoot.
Sam Jackson in the chat room brought up a question. I actually like the question. This is all great, and I applaud you, and I applaud Gary for his work. But like Stephen Hawking's A Brief Moment in Time, what are the first moments of this going to look like?
Sam, you have to go back and listen to part four. Now, I'll give you a quick rundown now. But I think you need to go back and listen to part four of Time for a Plan. Part one through three, we're going through the Under One Banner petition. Did I say part four? Part five. Part four was the militia and committees of safety. And part five, then we began discussing the plan. But that moment in time, and that is the key element. That's everybody's waiting for a Lexington and Concord or another Waco. Now, another Waco is not going to occur because the government got burned on that one. We're not going to get a Lexington and Concord. But if you understand what preceded Lexington and Concord, which I've written about in The End of the Revolution, The Beginning of Independence, for a year prior to Lexington Concord in western Massachusetts, patriots were picking up their rifles and going to courthouses and forcing judges to resign. It got so bad that Gage had promised courts that he would send, now courts and judges included legislative as well as judicial judges. But Gage was so upset that twice he was going to send his forces out to protect the courthouse, and both times he decided not to. Gage only had 6,000 men in Boston at the time, and we've got accounts of 10 or 20,000 patriots under arms quite often, sometimes with just sticks, but sometimes with rifles, going to close down courthouses. Gage was getting a lot of pressure from London to do something, so he devised this plan. I'm going to sneak out in the middle of the night and go into Concord and steal their ammunition, their cannon, and whatever I can get. And we know what happened there. That was April 18th when he sent his forces out. But it didn't just happen. The colonists forced Lexington and Concord to occur. They first forced Gage to act. Now, the playing field's different because of technology and everything now. For example, we're not sitting in a tavern in Boston talking about what to do, or a tavern in western Massachusetts talking about what to do. We're on the Internet right now, and I'm sure that the government's listening to what we have to say. Back then, they had the infiltrator group, but most people back then weren't as mobile as we are now, and they knew everybody since they were little kids. The judicial system didn't create informants by threatening criminal prosecution unless you agreed to work with the government. And this is where the playing field now has to be looked at in perspective, And what I've tried to do is adapt what happened then to now. So that first element that you're talking about, the first two parts of this plan, the MUSH and Committee of Safety, really play no part in it at all except to protect people in their community from illegal activity by the existing government. Now, what do I mean by that? Fifth Amendment, in the Bill of Rights, no person shall be held to answer except on presentment or indictment by a grand jury. Now, I've got, I don't know if Randy's got them up yet, but we've got some links. I've got an article from the early 1800s explaining the grand juries were not run by the U.S. attorney or the state attorney. It was run by the foreman of the grand jury, and he was a layman. He just was the foreman of the grand jury. So if I had a problem with government, I could go to the grand jury, and they could issue an indictment against the government, like Idaho did with Lon Hiroshi, and they would have to stand trial. Now, we've lost the ability for that grand jury to operate properly in the other direction, but we haven't lost the responsibility as a Committee of Safety and Militia to protect people where the government might say, we're charging this guy with the crime. Where's the indictment by the grand jury? And if they don't have it, you've got to protect this guy. Now, who is this guy? Well, he's one of the guys that is, whether he's a member of Committee of Safety or the militia, he will not be acting in the official capacity. But there's two articles up linked also, security teams and leaderless resistance. Now, if you got a security team or leaderless resistance cell, three, five guys, seven, whatever, a small group where you know and trust everybody in it, and it even talks about targeting, how you target people. You target somebody, and I'm going to use the theoretical, for instance, say Nancy Pelosi. So one night Nancy Pelosi wakes up with a serious case of lead poisoning and dies instantly. Now, the Patriot Press at that point has to say, well, it's a shame, but she probably deserved it. They've got to turn the tide of press to show how black this woman really was, how bad, how evil she was. Now, the people that did that, without a presentment or indictment by a grand jury, cannot be charged with the crime. And if you have any doubts about that, there's a Supreme Court decision called John Bad Elk versus United States, where John Bad Elk shot a marshal making an illegal arrest, killed him. He was convicted in the state, but when he got to the Supreme Court ruled that it would be a misdemeanor or no crime at all to shoot an officer who was making an unlawful arrest. So these things have to be understood. The Committee of Safety and the militia are a small unit in their community. They are there to protect their community. As we expand out, they join together and protect greater areas, geographic areas.
Now, I got a question for you. Let
me just finish this. The first two steps now are people on their own initiative going out and doing things to put the fear of God and the people in the government. They're the farmers from western Massachusetts that said, we've had enough and we'll use our rifles if we have to.
I've got a question for you. And the party brought up a good point, man. It goes back to the chicken and the egg situation. He said it's not time to target people or even talk about targeting people until after we have the COS and the militia to protect us. Now, you know, I guess you would say that I'm more of that cautious, you know, I come from the more of the cautious, you know, the cautious school of thought there, and I would have to tend to agree with that.
Well, why? I mean, the people that decide, you know, we are at the chicken and the egg. Let's just say that, now, you cannot dictate in the party, you cannot dictate what another man does. McVeigh blew up the Murrah building. We should have either applauded him or kept our mouths shut. We should not have joined the government side in damning him. He may not have done something that you have done, but we've got to be on the same side. We've got to not talk bad on our side. So if somebody out in Pelosi dies, and the
Gary, since this is hypothetical, you know, I really don't even like using real people's names, man. I mean, that's where we start, you know. We just had a comment in there. You know, now we're talking about the S-word
Smith,
there.
Jane Smith dies because she's promoted health care legislation, lied to us every time she gets in front of a television camera. She dies. Now, you're sitting here and you're thinking we want need to start a committee of safety. We need to get our militia more organized. Now, when news comes down that this has happened, you start realizing that the egg or the chicken got there before I did. We'd better get our act together and get the COS going and get the militia organized. If we wait for everybody, and how long, Randy, have we been waiting for the first committee of safety to come to our attention?
3 months.
More than that? Come on, go
well,
back.
Well, we've been pushing. We've been pushing for 3 months. We've been pushing them hard for 3 months, but we did our first show about them. Well, actually, man, if you want to get real about it, we started talking about committees of safety, you and I, a year and a half ago.
Right, but I think we did our first show in May, didn't we?
In May. We did the first two shows in May, and then...
How many committees of safety have been formed? How many militia have looked up to a committee of safety to transfer their obedience to should something occur? So now if something starts happening, maybe you'll get off your butt and go out and start a committee of safety. But if we're going to wait until we have, what, 300, 500? How many committees of safety do you think we should have before we can start to get our country back?
You know,
or should start with a bunch of Indians going into Boston Harbor and throwing a few $100,000 worth of tea and then dollars into the bay, kidnapping tax collectors and tarring and feathering them. They might die, but they're kidnapped, tortured. At everything. And these were done by individuals, not by committees of safety. The committees of safety never acknowledged doing any of this stuff. But how, now, do you really think that we need to get the committees in order first? And if your answer is yes, will you have yours ready by next week? TC Patriot, the state does not have to recognize the Committee of Safety. General Gates did not recognize the Committees of Safety. I wouldn't expect that he wouldn't. I wouldn't expect that the government was. Thing is, what can the government do about a Committee of Safety when it's such an important part of our heritage? That government wouldn't exist if it wasn't for Committees of Safety. So, how can they possibly damn our history to the point to say you can't collectively gather to encourage, support candidates or issues or protect your community or things like that? No, it's not 1775. We've got to adapt to modern battlefield.
You know, if you look back, you know, I want to make a point today. You know, if you look back, all of our generals, all the modern generals, they're still taught battlefield strategies from people like Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan, Hannibal, people that lived thousands of years ago. The strategies have not changed. The battlefields have, but the strategies have not.
You're right. Now, Mo Black, you're absolutely right. Our self-government is inalienable. They did not come from the Committee of Safety. But the collective form of that self-government has to manifest itself in a group of people. The individual self-government, your right to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, stands alone. But as a community, you can either go to the town council or the Committee of Safety. Take your choice. Now, when you understand the militia and the courts have to be obedient to a civil authority. Do you want it to be the town government or the city government, or do you want it to be the Committee of Safety? So, no, they didn't give you any authority. That's your manifestation of enforcing that authority. Yeah, and if you think you're not on the list, TC Patriot, I imagine that list is pretty long.
Well, you know what? Anytime you Google anything now, you Google swine flu, you're on a list. The day you were born, you were put on a list. Before you were born, you were put on a list. So, you know, we're on a list no matter what.
But anyway, this plan is to start an escalation of activity, just like the founders. It's modeled after what they did. Those first two steps are small groups of individuals taking a tax collector and tarring and feathering him, throwing him on a wagon, kidnapping him, torturing him, dragging him nearly naked through the snow-covered streets with signs hanging on him. Sometimes they would die as a result of the tarring and feathering. The other activity that was completely illegal under the laws then was tearing down customs houses, warehouses, and governor's mansions, and threatening people with their lives if they didn't get out of the house, it could be torn down. The Boston Tea Party. So these acts, illegal acts, not condoned by Committee of Safety or conducted by militia. These illegal acts were the precursor, now especially Western Massachusetts for a year, were the precursor to the revolution. Now you're saying we should have everything in order, but if you go to committee.org, you'll see right on the front page, the date is April 12, 1775, 1 week before Lexington and Concord. And the Massachusetts Provisional Congress, which is the State Committee of Safety, is saying the towns need to form committees of safety. So those committees of safety were not in place at that point in time in many of the towns in Western Massachusetts. And Western Massachusetts was prepared for war. They had already been playing the game, but they brought the rest of them in.
You know what, though? There was a big difference.
Hang on. You explain that to me. You tell me if it's not going to get worse.
No, it'll get worse.
Better.
It'll get worse, but here's my ideas on that as well, though. You know, I'm playing devil's advocate here, though. Now, in this situation, you know, we have to remember, though, back in those days, it was a different mentality and a different people. Everybody was armed. There was a gun in every house. People were not in every house anymore. Not as many people own guns as they had as they did back then. Back then it was pretty much mandatory. You better have a gun if you wanted to eat.
Well, in the country, but not in the cities. New York didn't have that many guns just like now. But okay, go ahead. I see your point. Go ahead.
You know,
how many people do we have with arms in this country now? I think the estimate is 140 million.
140 million. But also at that time, though, we had a much, much closer-knit community. We had people that were actually out in the streets active and talking with each other, and people that would do things, people that would stand up, people who would speak out. We don't have that anymore. We have lost a lot of that, and I think we really need to get that aspect of it back before we can really proceed forward anywhere, to be honest. That's my opinion there. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe we need something to help us get united or something. But you know, honestly, until we actually become, you know, focused on an overall objective with one goal in mind, restoration of the Constitution, our actions will really become, you know, our actions will really be for naught. Maybe under the trial of hardship, maybe we'll find that common bond, that common unity. I don't know. You know, that's just one of the problems that I really see anymore. Even militia today, you know, like the...
Will bring that unity?
I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know. Because I see it being split even more now. You know, you got people out there like Sam Kennedy and Tim Turner who are preaching that they're the rightful constitutional president and their idea of president is lifelong unelected with their rap plan. You know, and all of a sudden you got militia guys falling behind them and saying, yeah, we're good with that. I don't get it. I don't know. I don't know how we get there. That's the problem we need. That's the problem I think where we're at, man, is that we got, you know, even militias that say they abide by the Constitution and defend the Constitution, they're willing to fall behind guys who are looking to make themselves the self-appointed, unelected, lifetime leaders of the new president of the United States. I think we need to get committees of safety on board. I agree with that whole aspect of it.
Well, they weren't on board on April 12th, the week before Lexington and Concord, but once the activity started, the necessity became apparent in states that hadn't even considered it. I've got the minutes from 1774 on for the Albany, New York Committee of Safety. They'd been in existence for a while, but then they were more subject to Indian attacks than a lot of other places. They were out on the frontier back then. They're not anymore. But they had a committee, and they were appointing militia officers and different officers in the community. And when Lexington Concord occurred, they did not respond right away like people from other parts of New York, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and New Jersey did to come to Boston. But all of a sudden, if you read their minutes, after April 19th, they started thinking, and the committee began growing. More people started getting concerned. So you're expecting everybody to be concerned before we start. It didn't happen that way then. In everything that I've read, people did not want war. There's a book by Howard Fast called April Morning that kind of demonstrates that. And I've got a letter by a lady here that her husband was killed on Captain Davis on April 19th at Concord at North Bridge. But they had not wanted the war to come, and they've been hoping that things would change. But all of a sudden, when things start, reality hits. You know, it's time to pick sides, and no more procrastinating. We can procrastinate ourselves into slavery, and with the economy tanking the way it is, we're going to be in chaos if we don't find a way to make sure that food and fuel and communications and power keep flowing in this country. The plan takes that into consideration. If we allow the government to run this country into chaos by shutting down food, shutting down power, shutting down transportation, tying up the fuel reserves, we've lost control. If we take the initiative, and somebody said something on the chat about defense. What is the best defense? A good offense. It always has been. You don't use the offense unless you have to, but when in our history are we going to need to use that offense? I mean, we've been talking defense for 20 years now.
We have been.
We're not ready yet.
Well, you know, I was reading in, I keep referring back to Resistance to Tyranny. You know, I keep going back to Joseph P. Martino's book. And anybody who hasn't listened to those audios or those interviews, I would highly recommend going back and listening to the first two. I'm going to have him on again next month. We're going to continue on with the discussion of his book. This was his job in the military. You know, he studied uprisings and revolutions. He studied, what the hell is the word I'm looking for, Gary? Begins with an S. He studied insurrection. He studied uprisings. You know, and he said that, you know, until you get the public support behind you, any actions you do will fail. No matter what it is, it will fail until the public support is behind you.
He didn't say that in the book.
Yeah, I did. Go in there and read it, man. It says in there.
It's even in the
audio.
Each man has to decide for himself when the time has come. That was that whole discussion in that chapter.
Right, but even he said, any action.
You need to garner public support.
Yes, and if you don't garner this public support.
That's why the Correspondence Committee has to turn things and say that Jane Smith, it's a shame that she died, but look at how bad this person was. It didn't say that you have to have the support ahead of time. The support grows. The French Resistance didn't start with 40,000 people picking up rifles and going after the Germans. It started in very small cells that grew and brought more and more people in. It always starts small. It started small in this country. It started with tarring and feathering, tearing down buildings, dumping tea, then challenging judges to not take their oath, and finally 70, 80 men standing against the British at Lexington Green. They didn't have the support of everybody.
No, they didn't.
You said history, it did not exist. Now, I'm going to read you from December 12, 1774. The Maryland Association had separated itself from the government of Maryland because the governor had not been inimical to their cause that early on. This is a very small group in Maryland at this point. But in their resolve, they say, "We do most earnestly recommend that all former differences about religion or politics and all private animosities and quarrels of every kind from henceforth cease and be forever buried in oblivion. And we entreat, we conjure every man by his duty to God, his country, and his posterity cordially to unite in defense of our common rights and liberties." Now, there was a group of people, relatively small group of people that met in Annapolis. 5 months before Lexington Concord, and realized something was happening. Now, how many organizations in this country, small ones, militia, any type of organization, has not had more than 5 months to know that something serious is happening in this country? You're right. They were closer. They didn't watch television. They didn't spend their day on the Internet. They went out, met people in beer halls or in taverns, and talked with them. But the support for the action did not come until the action began. Except in Western Massachusetts and South Carolina, just about nothing happened. But there were people in those states that were fed up, they'd had enough, and they decided it's time to act. Nobody turned their back on them when they decided to act. And we're at that now. If we wait until everybody's ready to go, we're going to be waiting a long time.
No, I mean, you're right, but, I mean, you know, it goes back,
to get everybody behind you. He said you have to garner this public support in your activity.
Right.
That's what he was focusing on then.
You know, I guess that's where you have to figure out where the line is drawn. That, I mean, if you do, you know, if some people go out there and engage in acts that we can't get the public support on, you know, because they're just heinous, you know, we become anti-productive, you know, that's anti-productive, like he says, you know, we lose public support. So, and I don't know. I don't know what the answer there is. I mean,
no, we've got to encourage the public support. That's just it. I mean, nothing has a majority when it starts.
So, of course not. No, I know. Hell, I've been out here, man, for 20 years. Shit, I know. We're never going to get majority support. We're too far gone as a country for that. I got that part. I know that part. You know, I just you know, again, as always, you know, it comes down to, you know, who, at what point does somebody actually make themselves judge, jury, and executioner?
Well,
that's the scary part.
Those people took a risk when they dumped the tea in the harbor, didn't they? Those people took a risk when they confronted the soldiers in Boston, their one soldier on picket duty. Those people took a risk when they tore down the governor's house. Those people took a risk, individual, unlawful, illegal activity, when they tore down custom houses and took people for tarred and feathered them and took them on marches. Those were illegal activities. That's what I mean. This plan is modeled after our own history.
I get that part. The part that concerns me, though, is, well, for instance, I've seen people who call themselves militia who say that as long as they're armed, they'll have food, and what their intention was is to take from those who could not defend what they had. You know, and unfortunately, there's people like that in militia and the committees of safety and everything else, you know, and I'm worried that, you know, those people will go out and do things, and we will not be able to gain, you know, garner public support for their actions because, well, what they'll do is heinous. I mean, I don't know where it starts. You know, it's like, well, I asked Joe that. You know, like we used Germany. At what point should the people of Germany have stood up? You know, and it's hard to answer that question. At what point do
they
stand up?
Never would have had the majority, would they?
No.
And that's what I mean. They did not have the public support. He said you have to garner the public support after you start, and you have to be very careful in what you do. You don't want to cut electricity to people that need it. You don't want to cut off food supplies to people that need food. But he never said you had to get the support of the people before you start. You read it twice. I only read it once. I guess my
reading. Well, you know, I wasn't saying you have to have the majority of the public support, but he was saying you need to get the public support behind you, or your actions will fail.
Get it behind you. What is get? That's the future tense.
Future tense.
God is past tense. Okay, that's future tense. That's what he said. Yes, you have to get the public support, and the correspondence committee in this entire thing is constantly endeavoring to create that public sympathy for the cause. Now, there will be some people, just like in the American Revolution, that will never change sides. There will be some that will change sides whenever it's convenient. There will be some that profiteer. But the point is, nobody got behind fighting except Western Massachusetts and South Carolina until April 19th. And then all of a sudden, everybody was prepared to fight. There was a full-scale war going on within months. Hessians were being shipped across the ocean.
No, you're right.
But nobody wanted to drop the hammer and start things going.
But you know, it's funny when you look back on history. If you ask somebody now, you know, if given the opportunity to take a time machine and go back and, you know, assassinate Hitler, you know, play sniper on Hitler, would they do it? And to this day, I mean, if anybody said yes, they would, I don't think anybody would ever think badly of them.
That's exactly it.
But it's always hindsight. You know, it's always hindsight, though, that, you know, it's always seems to be hindsight when it's okay, never foresight.
No, except if somebody had done it, the support would have come. You grant that, right? Even from some of the German people. There were some military officers that from the beginning, as early as 1938, did not want to back Hitler. So, you know, there's always some on the other side. I'm sure in this country today, those people in the military, a lot of them, especially officers, look at Colonel West. He said fixed bayonets when he meant fixed ballot boxes, I think, but there's people in our military now that know that something's seriously wrong. Now, which side do you think they will take once it starts and gets known that it's the game has started? But until the game starts, nobody wants to take that first step. And those that are willing to take that first step are the ones that become unnamed heroes in the future. We know some of the people that did the tarring and feathering, some of the people led tearing down customs houses and the governor's mansion, but nobody knows for sure any one of all those many Indians that dumped that tea in Boston Harbor. You know, their names are lost to history, but, you know, you got to respect those people because they demonstrated what they felt. They demonstrated by illegal activity. Now, the amount of tea, we've been tossing it back and forth in a couple of conversations today, but my best recollection is at that time it was about $400,000 worth of tea. That would be many millions of dollars worth of tea today. Many millions of dollars worth of private property dumped in the ocean, destroyed. That probably would be worth more than some buildings. So, you know, when the individual, if you don't want to be the individual that's got the guts to go out and start it, don't. Nobody's asking you to. But if you believe in returning your country and you believe that a best defense is a good offense, and if you believe that it's only going to get worse, not better, and I can quote Patrick Henry there, that it is time to act. And if you go out and act, you should be able to expect full support from your militia and your committee of safety unless the government comes back with the proper indictment. Now, if you act and the ball starts rolling, it'll probably never get to the point of an indictment. But it takes a few brave souls to act outside the law to initiate what has to happen in this country. We will not get a Lexington Concord. We will not get another wake.
Well, we're down to our last 90 seconds. Is there anything in closing, Gary?
Oh, boy, we're right here. I'm on Skype. If anybody wants to discuss this, feel free to give me a call. I've gone over it for 20 years now, since Waco, 17 years. And this idea occurred to me as I was reading history last year, and the question, can it happen? And for years, I thought it couldn't. But I've been reading more and more history, learning more and more about our past. And if we emulate the founding fathers based on the playing field we're on today, we can prevail. If we wait, we will lose. This country will be in chaos. And at that point, your survival will be all, and the survival of your family will be all that matters. Well, thanks for listening. Come back next week.
And you know what? Make a step in the right direction. If you don't want to see it get there, get those committees of safety forming. Like Gary said, you know, we started talking about these back in May, several months. You can form them with three people. Three downloaded forms from the website in less than an hour time. So have a good one. Take care, everybody. I'll see you guys this Sunday for the Survival Sunday Show. Until then, have a great week. Be free. Bye-bye.